This is HPR episode 2797 entitled Writing Web Game in Haskell Simulation at High Level. It is hosted by Tuku Toroto and is about 26 minutes long and carries a clean flag. The summary is Tutorto gives overview of simulation in F4X game.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hello, this is Hacker Public Radio and I'm Tuuk Turto. Today I'm going to talk about writing a web game in Haskell and especially the simulation at the high level. So far, we have been concentrating on separate pieces, so now it's time to pull those pieces together and have something more concrete going on. So when I was thinking how to build the game and thinking all kinds of different simulations, In the end, I often do the system where simulation is done in steps, and they are taking every step is 1 month more or less, 1 Earth month more or less. The time is in decimal system, so for example, current time now would be 2019,3, and that's stored in the database as a 20,193, because integers are much more nicer than floats when you are adding continuously to them. With floats, you at some point start to get rounding errors and all kinds of surprises. So in the end, I want that the turn resolution happens every 24 hours, real time, automatically, but that part I haven't yet figured out how to do, so currently I'm just triggering it manually. So there's an interface where I press a button, and at that point this process that I'm going to describe next starts, and it simulates what happens during one decimal month in the game world. So main processing is this has a couple parts that I haven't gone through those yet. I probably will explain those later. And I'm not going to read out the type signature of the function. It's rather long, but it's in the show notes if you're interested on seeing it. Idea is that it's a function that has access to the database. It can both read and write there, and it returns a time in the end. It tells what's the time in the universe after the processing has been done. And I found it kind of interesting that in Persistent, the library that I'm using for the database access, you have very granular control over what kind of things your functions can do. So if you have some process that you know that it only reads from the database, you can tell that in the type signatures that this function only does reading. And if somebody tries to add at some point in the future in that function or in any function that it calls, it could be a very complicated process that takes really long to run and it has many parts and multiple reads. If somebody were to add something there that tries to write into the database, you would get a compilation error. So you have to tell in Persistent if the function or any function that it calls has read or write access or both into database. Okay, so the main idea is that there's this process turn function that takes no parameters. And it's a Well, I'm reading it out a little bit. So it starts like process turn equals do. So it's a monadic code. And new time, arrow to the left, advanced time. Here we are calling advanced time function that updates the time in the database for 1 month forward. Then, and returns it. So now that's in the new time variable. Underscore, arrow left, remove expired status is new time. So here we are, if you remember the previous episode where I talk about planetary statuses, that planet can have a good harvest, bad harvest, there might be some monster attacking there, or things like that. This part goes through all the statuses in the database and removes those that are marked to be removed when the time is what we just passed in or later. And the underscore arrow to the left means that whatever removed expired status is returns, we are discarding. We could call this without that underscore arrow to the left, but then we would be getting a compilation warning. And I like to keep the code so clean that there's no warnings at all. Because while the code might work in some cases with those warnings, there might be some other cases where it doesn't work. And if you have lots of warnings, lots of warnings that aren't important to you, and then there's a one important, you might miss that if there's a lots of warnings and you have gotten used to the fact that there's a 500 warnings, so one more you don't spot it. So I keep the code as clean as possible. So then statuses have been removed. Then it's factions, arrow to the left, select list, open bracket, close bracket, open bracket, ask as faction ID, close bracket. Here, select list is a persistent method. Here we are loading from the faction table, we are loading all the factions that are there and sorting them by the IDs and storing them into the factions variable. And now the factions variable is a list of faction entities. An entity is a data type that has a primary key and the actual data of what you found from the database. So now we have a list of those. And onwards, underscore, arrow to the left, map M, open parent, handle faction events, new time, close parents, factions. Again, discarding what we are receiving from this function, we are not interested in that. And then we are, map M is a, it's a, again, it's kind of like a map or fmap for that we have been talking previously, but with that capital M in the end is a hint that it's used in the monadic context. So now that we are doing a database access, we cannot use the map, we use the map M. I'll try to explain them briefly a little bit later in this episode. So what we are doing is that we are calling that handle faction event and giving that to our current time, and we are calling that function to each of the factions that we loaded previously. So we are doing sort of like a loop here. So this will handle special event resolution that I talked previously. So if there's a, for example, a cracky worm attack on a planet and player has chosen what they want to do or hand chosen, this part triggers the handling for that. Onward. Then there's a map M underscore handle faction food factions. This handle faction food doesn't return anything sensible. It returns a unit, so we don't have to we don't have anything that we would need to discard. So we are not using that underscore arrow to the left, but we are using a shorthand map M underscore that does the same thing. there's just so many of these things that it's hard to keep track of these sometimes. So handle function food. Here we are, again, we are calling this function to each and every of the factions in turn. So this one will take care of the food production and food consumption. I haven't gone through what actually happened inside of this function in previous episodes. Maybe I will do that at some point. It's a kind of quite simple. There currently isn't that much interesting there, but if and when there's more interesting stuff happening in there, I will go through that. But in any case, this will produce food in a planet, and then the population on the planet will consume that food, and what food is left over, or biological resources, as they are called in the game, are stored in the stores. And if your population is consuming more food than they're producing, then they are using the food from the stores. Okay, then mapm underscore open paren handle faction construction new time close paren factions. Again, we are calling the handle faction construction with new time and each of the factions. And this will take care of the various construction products. This I haven't gone through previously. I will do that. I have to do some work there still before I can explain the idea and what I'm doing there. But basically this will, you have construction projects on various places, and this is where those construction products are progressing and maybe completing, and then these are generated and the usual. Then underscore arrow to the left, map M, open paren, add special events, new time, close paren, factions. So here we are calling add special events, new time, to with each and every of the factions. And this is the part that adds a new special, possible new special events. I'm not sure if I have gone through this part in detail. I might not have. But this adds, this is the place where new special events can happen randomly. There's a big list of special events, and then they have a randomized, then they have some percentage of chance occurring, and based on, and then they have some preconditions, and based on that, all that information, each faction may or may not get a special event added to some place. And the final step is mapm underscore open paren handle faction observations new time close paren factions. Handle faction observation I have gone through, I believe. This is where all kinds of reports are generated for you. If you have a population on a planet, they will write a report to you that this is what we see. If you have a spaceship somewhere, they will write a report that this is what we see. If you have a probe somewhere, they will write a report that this is what we'll see. All that information is stored into the database, and whenever information about something is looked upon, like you want to know what you know, for example, some planet, then all those reports that have been written for that planet are retrieved, and they are combined, and that's your current knowledge of the place. Some of that information might be up to date, some of that information might be obsolete, or some of that information might be downright wrong, and some of that information you might be completely lacking. So you don't have a perfect view of the universe around, only what you actually have seen and observed, and there might be some information that is out of date because you haven't been at the place where the information is. Like if you make an expedition to some faraway place and see that, okay, here's a rocky planet, nothing to see here, come back, then that's the information that you will be shown when you check the status of the planet. There might be a huge civilization there, but you don't know because you haven't seen that. And the final line on the code that process turn function is return new time. So here we are returning the new time, the time, current time of the universe after the processing. And why are we using return here when we are not, when we haven't been using it pretty much anywhere else? And that's the answer is that the process turn is a monadic function. In this case it deals with input and output, specifically at the database. So there's a bit of extra work that you have to do to be allowed to do that. In Haskell, functions are they use the pure, so they work in a way that when given same set of parameters, they always return the same answer, and there's no dependencies to outside systems. So there are, I think another term is referentially transparent. You could replace function with a huge lookup table that would have all the combination of the parameters and answers to those. So there's no, the outside world doesn't affect them, or some another part of the system doesn't affect them. They are just, data goes in, data comes out, and the data that comes out is always the same on the given set of inputs. It doesn't change. But that of course doesn't work in a, when you start dealing with the database, for example. So here you have a, you have to have a bit of extra structure. So if you remember map, that's a way of running a function over a list. So you have a type signature of the map is a open paren A, arrow B, close paren arrow list A, arrow list B. So when given a function and a list, it will produce you your new list. And the elements of that new list are what you got when you run that function to elements of the old list. Fmap is a similar concept. It's a type signature is an open paren A, arrow B, close paren arrow FA, arrow FB. Again, same concept, but instead of working on a list, it works on a F, and F can be a some structure. It could be a list, it could be a maybe, it could be a either. So fmap works for functors that I talked about earlier. So map M is the same thing, but for the monads. Each type signature is map M is a monad M, fat arrow, open parents A, arrow MB, close parents, arrow DA, arrow M, open parents DB, close parents. So if you have this in the show notes and you look at them and take a couple steps backwards and squint really hard, then you can see that they are very similar. All three take a function, then they take something, and then they produce something else. And that works only with the lists. Fmap works with the functions. It can have different kind of structures there. It's a more generalized. And map M, you have that monad M are hanging around there. So instead of function being from A to B, it's from A to MB. So that B value is part of a, or in part of a structure M. And that M is the monad. There are many kinds of monads. It's a really fascinating topic. It's not as difficult as you might have led to believe. When somebody explains that to you in a really well, it's really simple concept, but the problem here is that it's fairly abstract, And if you are only explained the abstract part, you don't really get why they are important in the programming, especially the Haskell. But better way, the way I learned them was that I didn't concentrate on the abstract part, but I concentrated on what you can do with them, what they actually do for you. And here, there I learned how to do that. I'm going to try to explain them at a bit later episode. But I need to come up with a really good explanation. But for now, it's enough to understand that map M is similar to map and fmap, but it also deals with the input output in this situation. Monads are not only for the input and output; they are highly versatile. You can use them for many things. And they are sort of next step in the chain that started with the function and continued with the applicative that I talked earlier. But for now, it's enough to know that in this case, they are there for dealing with the input and output. Okay, so back to the process turn. So each step is done for all of the functions before moving to the next step. Like, first we are, well, the status removal are done for everything in one go, but for example, the special event resolution is done for the, you know, to all functions. And then the food production and consumption is done to the all functions, and so on. Originally, I handled each function at a time, like, did all these things to one faction and then process the another faction and then the next. But then I started thinking that there's a discontinuation in the universe. Like one part of the universe is 1 month ahead of another part of the universe. And if there's any interactions between those universums and those parts of the universe in the later point in the simulation, it looks funny. And so I had it originally working like that, and then I thought that it might be more sensible to run it in slices, so parts of the universe update, like the whole universe updates in the terms of the special events, and then all of the universe updates in the terms of the food production and consumption and so on. So then it's still done one place at the time, but it's not so big leap in a long go. That's the thing with the computer simulation. You are usually dealing with a discrete time, like you have a steps that you are doing it. You could do continuous simulations, I think, with some fancy mathematics, but that would be way beyond of my skills. It would be interesting exercise, but I suspect that would be way beyond my skills, and that might be a pretty taxing for the computer to do. Okay, so after all this, the time in the universe has moved 1 month forward, 1 decimal month forward, and players can review reports, special event statuses, and whatnot. They can browse around with the web interface and do whatever they want to do. And like I said, this will run when at pre-configured times, when I get that written, and that requires me to figure out how to do that. So even if players have not made their choices, then this will run. It just means that they didn't feel or didn't have time to make those choices. The world keeps rolling even when somebody doesn't do anything. And in the end, I want to add a little bit automation to the to the game, so you could have instructions. You could give some governor of the planet instructions that I want you to govern this planet in some specific way. Like, I want you to take the planet to this direction or that direction or whatever. And here's your resources. And just go wild. And after that, the player wouldn't have to micromanage that planet by themselves. Of course, there might be a situation where some player is actually playing as a governor of a planet. And then the whole point of the game is to take those resources that they have and do with the planet what they want to do, or what orders they have been given by somebody else. They might be a vassal of some Star Lord, for example, who governs, who has a domain of multiple planets and has delegated their authority to some governors. And that Star Lord could be a real player, or it could be a computer player. But in any case, then the planetary governor would be a player, and they would be playing and managing that single planet. And maybe they would be very ambitious players, and they would secretly start playing a political game, and maybe military game, and try to declare independence and start their own empire that way. Okay, I think that's enough for now. And the best way nowadays is to catch me is either the email or at Fediverse, where I'm tuturto@mastodon.social. Okay. Ad astra.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club, and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.